Environmental catastrophes and global policy disasters loom, but we are left with little more than platitudes to confront them with. We wrote this book to hold on to hope, to tell ourselves a story of what went wrong and why, but also as a reminder of all that has gone right. A book as much about the problems as about how our world can be put back together as long as we are honest with the diagnosis. A book about where economic policy has failed, where ideology has blinded us, where we have missed the obvious, but also a book about where and why good economics is useful, especially in today's world. The fact that such a book needs to be written does not mean we are the right people to write it. Many of the issues plaguing the world right now are particularly salient in the rich North, whereas we have spent our lives studying poor people in poor countries. It was obvious that we would have to immerse ourselves in many new literatures, and there was always a chance we would miss something. It took us a while to convince ourselves it was even worth trying. We eventually decided to take the plunge, partly because we got tired of watching at a distance, while the public conversation about core economic issues, immigration, trade, growth, inequality, or the environment, goes more and more off kilter. But also because, as we thought about it, we realized the problems facing the rich countries in the world were actually often eerily familiar to those we are used to studying in the developing world. People left behind by development, ballooning inequality, lack of faith in government, fractured societies and polity, and so on. We learned a lot in the process, and it did give us faith in what we as economists have learned best to do, which is to be hard-headed about the facts, skeptical of slick answers and magic bullets, modest and honest about what we know and understand, and perhaps most importantly, willing to try ideas and solutions and be wrong, as long as it takes us toward the ultimate goal of building a more humane world. Chapter 1. Mega. Make Economics Great Again. A woman hears from her doctor that she has only half a year to live. The doctor advises her to marry an economist and move to South Dakota. Woman. Will this cure my illness? Doctor. No. But the half year will seem pretty long. We live in an age of growing polarization. From Hungary to India, from the Philippines to the United States, from the United Kingdom to Brazil, from Indonesia to Italy, the public conversation between the left and the right has turned more and more into a high-decibel slanging match where harsh words, used wantonly, leave very little scope for backtracking. In the United States, where we live and work, split-ticket voting is at its lowest on record. 81% of those who identify with one party have a negative opinion of the other party. 61% of Democrats say they view Republicans as racists, sexists, or bigots. 54% of Republicans call Democrats spiteful. A third of all Americans would be disappointed if a close family member married someone from the other side. In France and India, the two countries where we spend a lot of time, the rise of the political right is discussed in the liberal, enlightened elite world we inhabit in increasingly millenarian terms. There is a clear feeling that civilization as we know it, based on democracy and debate, is under threat. As social scientists, our job is to offer facts and interpretations of facts we hope will help mediate these divides, help each side understand what the other is saying, and thereby arrive at some reasoned disagreement, if not a consensus. Democracy can live with dissent, as long as there is respect on both sides. But respect demands some understanding. What makes the current situation particularly worrying is that the space for such conversation seems to be shrinking. There seems to be a tribalization of views, not just about politics, but also about what the main social problems are and what to do about them. A large-scale survey found Americans' views on a broad spectrum of issues